Lovers of earth tones and Wisconsin towns love November with its grays and browns. Let's brighten the scenery with some radio din. It's time for Spectrum West to begin. This is where the arts and culture of Western Wisconsin gets its airwaves. This week, a real treat. Mezzo-soprano Kate Lindsay sweeps into Eau Claire tonight, Thursday, to perform selections from her acclaimed album, Thousands of Miles, with jazz pianist Baptiste Trottignon. The Pablo Center hosts. A couple of weeks from now, the same venue will be the site of something called True North, a casserole of entertaining people, stories, music, visual effects, and more. We'll be talking with producer Mike Paulus, performer Jody Arnold, and composer Sean Carey. There's a special meeting of the Sierra Club next week at which the St. Croix River Association will celebrate 50 years of river protection. An exceptional documentary film will be shown. Our guests are Deb Ryan of the SCRA and John Call of Afton Films. But here is where we jump in with both feet. Gatsby's Gala is an event in the Valley of the Chippewa that's become accustomed and addicted to. It's a fun, full-sized fundraiser for Eau Claire Jazz, the organization that has worked to enlarge Eau Claire's position on the musical map. It happens in about a week. And Miss Bree DeNeur is the Eau Claire Jazz Communications Director. She and her energy showed up at our studio recently. But tell me about being communications director for Eau Claire Jazz, Inc. I mean, there's a lot to communicate. I understand, previous conversations, that you are a musician, but that's not your major.
I came in as a music education major playing saxophone. In high school, they told us if you enjoy being around people and you like music, you should be a band director. As I was a freshman here in UW-Eau Claire, I got a chance to work with Eau Claire Jazz. I saw some people getting involved in the organizational side of music. I was like, I want to do that. So I started as a just basic office intern, getting my hands in whatever I could. And I started seeing the events and the things that we put on and the communal effect that it has and getting people outside of music involved in the appreciation of it. Once I had a little bit, I couldn't get enough. That has just spiraled into journalism and stories, photos and videos, visual marketing, website design, and you name it.
So is your saxophone just collecting dust or what?
Absolutely. It's, I'm just
kidding.
Yeah,
you're playing.
No, I'm still playing, still involved in university ensembles, taking lessons. It just takes the sidelines for a couple hours a day. Hopefully there never comes a day where I don't know where my saxophone is.
Have you had the same sax for a long time?
I have. Sophomore year of high school, my band director, I was playing a very student average horn, and my band director said, Bree, you need like an upper model, and my parents said, okay. Ooh. They're not musicians whatsoever. They're just like, this is the supplies that she needs, so let's do that. And I've been playing the same horn, same mouthpiece, reed, all set up. Sound is a big influence for me, so rather than equipment.
If it ain't broke, don't break it.
Exactly.
That's what I always say. People who are saying to themselves, Gatsby, I'm going to give them a little refresher here. The Great Gatsby is a 1925 novel written by American author F. Scott Fitzgerald that follows a cast of characters living in the fictional towns of West Egg and East Egg on prosperous Long Island in the summer of 1922. The story primarily concerns the young and mysterious millionaire Jay Gatsby and his quixotic passion and obsession with the beautiful former debutante Daisy Buchanan. Considered to be Fitzgerald's magnum opus, The Great Gatsby explores themes of decadence, idealism, resistance to change, social upheaval, and excess, creating a portrait of the roaring 20s that has been described as a cautionary tale regarding the American dream. Now, Bree,
yes.
Of those five attributes, decadence, idealism, resistance to change, social upheaval, and excess, which are most prevalent in the evening known as Gatsby's Gala?
Ooh.
Or maybe all of them.
That's a great question. I mean, decadence stands out to me, first of all, based on our inspiration for the setting, the backdrop, the decorations.
Resistance to change doesn't apply here, so we could just scratch that. Social upheaval, kind of.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Right, the amount we've had over 1,000 people come in the past couple of years, which is incredible, and we're reaching up to numbers of 1,400, and
wow.
now with our social media presence and involving people, and it's a party in general, so having all sorts of people there.
Idealism and excess, they're there too.
Naturally.
Gotta be. It's not a success without excess. That's the way I always
say. You say it best.
Bree DeNoor is with us. She is Communications Director for Eau Claire Jazz, Inc., the 5th annual, Friday, November 9th, 8 p.m., Davies Center, UW Eau Claire. A little party never killed nobody. So what's involved in putting something together that's as big as Gatsby's Gala? I know some people like to say gala. How are the musical acts selected? Because there's a lot of music.
The main acts are the top two university ensembles from UW Eau Claire. Mm-hmm. So that's Jazz 1 and Jazz 2.
Mm-hmm.
Renowned award-winning Jazz 1 as well, all directed by Dr. Robert Baca.
What a guy he is.
What a guy. We love him.
Mm-hmm.
The big band traditional MC of the night is carried by those two bands. And then selectively, we involve community members and community groups.
Mm-hmm.
So that could be soloists, saxophonists such as Sue Orfield, communal groups such as Laska, all from different genres. We try to incorporate the community as much as possible in this process because that's the importance of Gatsby in general. We feel that it connects music and the community, whether you have a musical background or not.
So is this something that you dive into right after this one's done? You have to get ready for planning next year's, or do you have some time off?
We have a little time off. We have this great, big, amazing event called the Eau Claire Jazz Festival in the spring.
That's
so that,
true, yes.
That takes a little prevalence, and then usually around summertime is when we start thinking about Gatsby's again.
Okay.
Yes.
What other amenities are there at this evening? Is there food? I know that there's probably liquid refreshment. What else?
Absolutely, all of the above. So when you enter, you'll have your tickets, coat check in the first floor of Davies. Enter the elevator, go up to the third floor, and opens, and there are decorations all down the hall. We have bars open, alcoholic or non-alcoholic beverages.
Wow.
There will be food available for purchase. It's not included in the ticket
sales.
What kind
of food? I bet you know.
I do actually. So Blue Gold Dining through the university caters our event. They have made really impressive dishes in the past that are delicious and unique. Finger food, things you can snack on, a little something. Nothing like a three-course meal. Maybe we'll get there by maybe the 7th annual. But for now, just something to bite on between dance moves and between tunes.
How about parking? At a premium or is that pretty convenient?
It's generally convenient. Davies has a large parking lot outside. If you can get a ride, that's amazing, but there is parking on site as well.
No shuttles involved?
Not in the past, but that's a great idea. I'll bring it back to my team.
You could park anywhere at the...
Maybe on Water Street, all the way over.
Yeah, or any of the open lots on the campus.
You could definitely.
Hop that. What the heck?
Yeah.
So the parking is
free.
Give
you 10%. It is free.
Parking's free.
It is free.
I am fascinated, and I'll bet the ghosts of the Roaring Twenties are very proud that what they originated is still looked upon as a great way to celebrate. The Roaring Twenties are alive, very alive, and very well at this event.
And it all derives from traditional big band music. So you think of greats like Duke Ellington and Count Basie and the sounds and sights of that era. That is what we channel to originate this event.
So people contemplating going for the first time, they should know that dressing up is it.
Is a huge part of this event, which is what we love and love to market about as well. Because people love an event that they can dress up to the nines, take photos, you know, get out of their everyday reality and enjoy. Everything from flapper dresses to suit coats and fedoras, canes, gloves, a little bit of everything. I have a suit coat myself. I have a beaded flapper dress, a little bit of everything, even stemming back to makeup trends.
So people are saying, I haven't been there before. Our conversation has caused them to get all excited. How do they get tickets, and can they get tickets?
Absolutely. So tickets are on sale on the UW Eau Claire campus at Davies Center. Inside, there's something called the Service Center, right as you walk in on the right-hand side, and they can help you there.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, tickets are available on our website, www.eauclairejazz.com. Tickets for students are $20, and community members are $35.
Her name is Bree. It's called the 5th Annual Gatsby's Gala. It is Friday the 9th of November, 8 p.m., Davies Center, UW Eau Claire. Thanks.
Thank you.
And if you go, when you go, because you know you will eventually, have fun and let Eau Claire Jazz know how much you appreciate everything they do to add to the quality of life in these parts. Coming up, the speaking voice behind the singing one, Kate Lindsay, performs tonight, Thursday, and we have a preview. Plus, we're headed true north. And next, the birthday party continues. This is Spectrum West on WPR, and support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from Marquardt Toyota with the all-wheel drive RAV4, an SUV committed to reliability. Marquardt Toyota is located off Highway 53 between Eau Claire and Chippewa Falls, or MarquardtToyota.com. Support also comes from Minnesota Marine Art Museum in Winona with Craig Blacklock's photos exploring the St. Croix and Namekagon River, celebrating the Wild and Scenic Rivers Act. More at mman.org. Support also comes from Volume 1, presenting True North, a night of stories and visuals from Wisconsin writers, performers, and artists on stage at the Pablo Center November 16th and 17th. Volume1.org/True North. It's the 50th birthday of the National Wild and Scenic Rivers Act, put on the books in 1968, thanks to politicians working together. Wow, there's a novel idea. The Sierra Club and the St. Croix River Association are holding another party at which a documentary film will be shown called Wild and Scenic St. Croix. Stunning footage and photography, seasons and reasons, history, and some voices of today relating the importance of preserving for tomorrow. John Call produced the film, and Deb Ryan is director of the River Association. We all shared a phone call the other day. Deb, this coming new year, you will celebrate 10 years as executive director of the SCRA. Now, in the film, we learn that Deb Ryan not only talks the talk, but also walks the walk. You've been a river rat for quite some time. I found it invigorating to hear that one good way to allow the river systems to make a difference in your life, any life, is to get to know these resources intimately, and you have.
Absolutely. It's the best way to get to know anything is a personal connection. And once you've made a personal connection with the St. Croix National Scenic Riverway, you will never forget.
Talk about the 10 years.
We've grown. So we started as an all-volunteer group. We've been around since 1911. And until the fall of 2009, we were all volunteer. And I was the first executive director. And when I first came on, I was also the only staff. We now have a staff of 11 and up to 12 interns that come in seasonally for us every year, and they work on a variety of things. We work on invasive species, we work on land and water protection, and our most fun part is connecting people to the river.
Well, obviously, your delegation skills have increased over the years.
Sure have. I haven't given up my week-long paddle, though. I still lead a week-long paddle on the Namekagon or the St. Croix, and it's tough for me to give that one up.
Well, John, you are obviously a good filmmaker, but I'm going to guess that one cannot make a film like the one you produced, called Wild and Scenic St. Croix, without also being a big fan of the subject. Tell me about your relationship with these wild and scenic rivers.
So about 28 years ago, my family and I moved out to Afton, which is located on the St. Croix River. In all those years I've lived out here, I've spent a great deal of time plying the waters of the St. Croix in my kayak. I haven't covered every inch of it, but I've covered most of it.
I heard in the film, or I read it somewhere, we protect what we love. Deb, do we still possess the same passion that it took 50 years ago to pass legislation that created this heirloom? And would people be surprised to hear about ways that this protection might be under attack? I mean, there are threats out there, some of them old, like economic development, and others a bit more contemporary, like invasive species and climate change, that sort of thing.
People who have individual connections still absolutely have the passion they've always had, but I do think many people would be surprised how especially recently the threats seem to be compounding, whether it be development, which has always, I mean, that's the reason we were designated, was to curb development on what is a beautiful wild and scenic river. But the invasive species, for instance, once people know and understand, in not taking your pontoon boat above the high bridge, for instance, where there are no zebra mussels, makes a difference in whether or not we have zebra mussels above the high bridge. Once people know and once they understand, they're all very willing to abide by that. But understanding and knowing that rule is a completely different thing. I think the hardest for people to understand is how fragile this ecosystem is. It is so wonderful because it is a very diverse, very rich, very alive ecosystem. Mm-hmm. And you never know what the one thing is that's going to trigger the collapse of a system. So just making sure that everything stays healthy helps us to protect and guard against those things that are trying to impinge.
I'm guessing that it's harder than ever, given maybe the political climate, the pull of the almighty dollar, and more things going on, to protect the protection, so to speak.
Oh, that's probably the thing that scares us the most, is you look around nationally at all national parks, and this is a national park. They're being threatened by mineral rights and mining and frack sand and oil extraction. We're just a small little wild and scenic river. Yes, we have 1 million-plus visitors every year, but it's not like a Yellowstone or a Grand Canyon where there are tens of millions of people that come every year, and yet they're being threatened. So if they can be threatened, we can be threatened.
We're on the phone to publicize a meeting of the Chippewa Valley Sierra Club. That meeting is coming up at the River Prairie Center. That's in Altoona. It's coming up the 7th of November. Starts at 7 o'clock. Open to the public. No charge. The St. Croix River Association is co-sponsoring the meeting. Deb Ryan is on the phone with us. She's executive director of the St. Croix River Association. Also on the phone with us, John Call, producer of the film Wild and Scenic St. Croix. It's nearly a half-hour film documentary for the 50th anniversary of the National Wild and Scenic Rivers Act. John, what did you know, or what did you feel, possibly, after doing the film, that you did not know or feel in the same capacity before you started? Anything?
Well, I became more familiar with the natural history of it, and then, of course, the geological history, mm-hmm. a very, very interesting Native American history. Things like the role that the St. Croix River Association has played in protecting the river. Digging into the role that Gaylord Nelson and Walter Mondale played in making this happen. The film covers a lot of things. My end goal in it goes back to the comment you made to Deb, which is we protect what we love. And the purpose of the film was to familiarize people with the St. Croix River, because if they love the river, they're much more apt to take care of it in an era where there's a real onslaught from, as you mentioned, invasive species, mm-hmm. the desire to make a buck, people who want variances. It's a constant attack, and Walter Mondale has wisely observed that we're not going to lose our national park in one grand gesture. His fear is we're going to lose it in a series of nicks and cuts, a little bit here, a little bit there, and pretty soon we don't have what we have tried to preserve for the last 50 years.
Talk a little bit about how Wisconsin and Minnesota work together on this stuff.
It was initiated by Gaylord Nelson, who had already been in the U.S. Senate for some time. And he made an overture to a new senator named Walter Mondale about working with him to preserve this river. And Walter Mondale jumped on it right away. He was quite familiar with the river. He had a place on the river through his wife and later a cabin on it. And so he jumped right on it. Most of the controversy in terms of passing the legislation came on the Minnesota side. That's where the bigger population was.
Okay.
And so Walter Mondale makes humorous comments about how Gaylord Nelson got him into a kind of a controversial enterprise, but he does that in a good-natured fashion. And he never retreated. They both forged ahead in a five-year struggle to make it happen.
So that's what happened 50 years ago. Deb, you as head of the St. Croix River Association, which is located in St. Croix Falls, Wisconsin, still have firsthand knowledge of how today Wisconsin and Minnesota work together.
I sure do. And in fact, speaking back to what was unique at the time, I think was so incredibly important and maybe isn't as likely to happen now, was the partnership that it took to create this national park. So it wasn't just Gaylord Nelson and Fritz Mondale. Those two were critical and key players, of course. But really, the fact that Northern States Powers donated over 25,000 acres and their CEO went to Washington, D.C. to lobby on behalf of creating this national park was just an incredible story in and of itself. Add to that all the people that have given scenic easements or their land itself to help create this national park. The public, private, and really corporate partnership that created the St. Croix National Scenic Riverway was incredible. And I'm really concerned that sort of collaboration and cooperation, both because of political unwillingness to work together across political boundary lines. The corporate ownership just really hasn't been as strong in recent years, or we haven't seen it from many other entities.
Yeah, I was interested to note during the film about NSP's stewardship in closing the entire area that they owned to commercial development. I thought that was wonderful.
It was an amazing thing. They actually even had picnic areas, landings, picnic tables before they gave it up. They maintained this as a park with a park plan and with maps available to the citizens. So it just was a wonderful story to have been able to revisit and tell.
As they were ceding sections of this land to local units of government and the federal government, they insisted these entities set aside enough money to maintain the property in the manner it should be maintained, in the manner they had maintained it during the time they owned it.
How are we doing today? People who use the rivers, are they being kind to it?
You know, I would say 90% of the people, just like anywhere, are doing a really great job, and then there's a few that aren't.
Deb, regular people can do a lot. Coming to this meeting on the 7th of November, that's kind of a good start.
That's a perfect start. We're going to have a panel of speakers that will talk to the future. What will it take to make sure that this riverway remains special for the next 50 years? John's film does a terrific job of laying out the history, and we talk a little bit about the future, talk certainly about the current, but really thinking about how are we going to get people to put down their cell phones and reconnect with the river. We're looking for ways to make sure that people still can engage in fun and meaningful ways, then be responsible when they're out there. So don't throw your beer cans in the river. Don't develop all the way to the edge. Don't mow your lawn to the edge of any river or stream. Those sorts of things, I don't know if they're common knowledge, but there are a lot of things that everyone can do.
Deb Ryan, thanks for being with us here on Wisconsin Public Radio. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
John Call, likewise.
Thank you.
Again, the meeting is next Wednesday. It's November 7th, 7 p.m., River Prairie Center in Altoona. All are welcome, no charge. Why not bring the whole family? It's about their future after all. The website again, St. Croix River Association.org. Spectrum West on Wisconsin Public Radio. Volume 1, although it's an enterprise, is ultimately a regular gathering of individuals, each bringing originality to the dance. You hear the name Volume 1, you think Arts and Culture magazine, and yet every time they need a new pair of shoes, they discover they need the next bigger size. Always looking for new ways to engage with all of us. The newest and arguably most vigorous engagement is coming up in a couple weeks. True North, real Wisconsin stories unfolding live on stage. The name says a lot of what we need to know, but I like getting more from the horse's mouth. So we invited three thoroughbreds. Mike Paulus, producer, Jody Arnold, participant, and Sean Carey, distinguished musician and composer. So here we go. Let's set the compass for True North. Now, this is a big deal in about every way possible. Scope, cast, crew, production, components. Mike, this idea must have been percolating for a while. Tell me about that process.
Well, Volume 1's been wanting to do a show like this for years. Finally, we kind of had the right resources in-house, kind of knew the right people, and with the opening of the Pablo Center, mm-hmm. we just figured it was time to pull the trigger and actually make it happen.
Now, it's not as if Volume 1 people didn't have enough to do.
No, we have a lot of projects going on. In fact, I've been working full-time at Volume 1 for about 12 years, and I've been involved since the very first issue, and I've helped put on events for the magazine and everything. But out of all the projects we work on and that I've ever worked on, I am more excited about this than mm-hmm. anything I've ever worked on there before.
This show has a truckload of logistics.
Yeah, it does. It's got a lot of moving parts, and we've never done anything like this. We've got storytellers and writers and actors and dancers, films and animations and live music. There's a lot to pull together for this, for sure.
Oh. And Sean, you are a busy guy, but I've always heard that when you want something done, ask the busiest people. Tell me about the challenge of coming up with a live score for something that is so eclectic. There must be a whole bunch of mood changes.
Yeah, exactly. It's quite challenging, and you know, a lot of it we're going to figure out once we start rehearsing the week of. But right now, yeah, I'm sort of collecting all those different mood changes and trying to find references so that my band and I all sort of are on the same page.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a mix of stuff that's actually scored and stuff that we're improvising on the fly that sort of fits that mood. So I'm excited to see how it comes together.
So now in your mind, is the configuration all electronic, or is there some acoustic? Is it pre-recorded? Will it all be live, or a combination of all of the above?
It's going to be all live, and it's going to be definitely more in the acoustic realm of things. It'll be piano and guitars and upright bass, and probably some synths and some other things that are nice for pads and beds of sounds and stuff like that. But it'll be very, very live.
Sean, I hear that you requested a grand piano for the show.
I did, yes. Any piano, but I think a grand would sound great in that room.
Yeah, I think we are getting you a grand piano, so that's coming through.
Great. Well, yeah, we have Josh Gallagher on the piano, so I want to give Josh, what he deserves, and he's a brilliant pianist. So my job will be, I'm going to be playing other instruments to sort of coach Josh through the different things, and he's such an amazing player that he never fails.
Yeah, no kidding. I saw Josh just a week ago with Chippewa Valley Jazz Orchestra in that same room, and it sounded wonderful. Good stuff coming. Jody, you are relating the story about the legendary cave lady of Eau Claire.
Yeah.
What credentials do you have that make you a perfect fit for this role?
What kind of show is this?
It's public radio. You can say just about anything.
Well, let's say, I mean, in some ways, I perhaps feel like a little bit of a modern-day version of Maude Phillips, who's also known as Violet Lee, the poet from Eau Claire. She was a pretty modern lady for her time. Thankfully, I'm not living during those times, so I get to avoid the part where I get institutionalized. But she was a little bit of a scandalous gal. She liked the fellas and was very bold and very brave, had quite an attitude, and didn't really care much about what anybody else thought about it. So I really liked that about her.
So are you describing yourself in all that?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Now I know you. I know you better now.
Yeah, I didn't know about her until Mike talked to me about being part of the performance. I had heard of her very briefly, but of course I really dove into the story when I started writing my piece.
Uh-huh.
And I realized that underneath all of that was a person that was just super, probably very super progressive for the time, and stuck in a situation that was pretty rough for an artist, a female artist in the early part of the 20th century.
That's Jody Arnold. She is a participant, also in the studio with us is Mike Paulus. He's a producer and a Volume 1 guy. On the phone is Sean Carey. He's the musician, the Doc Severinsen of the whole show.
Yep.
The program's called True North, Real Wisconsin Stories Unfolding Live on Stage, coming up. It's a Friday and Saturday.
Yep, Friday and Saturday.
Friday and Saturday, November 16th and 17th, 7:30, Jamp Theater, Pablo Center, downtown Eau Claire. Mike, the release I read also acknowledged some support from CVTC. What's their role?
Well, they are one of the sponsors of the show, helping support us financially. But all of our sponsors, we want to work into the show in kind of more creative and innovative ways. So we won't be stopping the show to have a commercial. We've actually developed an original piece to kind of perform live for our sponsors. So they'll actually be literally part of the show.
Now, this show is being called a debut, which might denote more to come.
Well, if it goes well, we're hoping we can do it next
That's
year.
That's always the caveat.
Yeah, you know, and it's a hard show to explain exactly what it is. I can take a quick stab at it. basically, for the show, we've gathered 9 writers or storytellers, and they each have their own story to tell. And these could be something that started out as a print feature in Volume 1. It could be a personal narrative or some part of their life, all true stories. Mm-hmm. Or, like in Jody's case, we've actually asked her to produce an original story just for the show. And so once we had those stories, we got our director, Jake Lindgren, who produced Michael Perry's stage adaptation of Population 45. He's been working with the storytellers to bring their performance to life. But in addition to Sean Carey's original music, we're also adding all this multimedia. So that's kind of been the biggest challenge of all this. Each piece has its own kind of signature piece of multimedia. Could be archival photos or video. It could be, like in Jody's case, we're producing brand new original mini movies in kind of a silent movie format to go along with her Cave Lady story. So those will be on screen. And Jody is actually playing Maude Phillips, the Cave Lady, in those movies. We're doing original animations, illustrations, there's dancing, there's acting, there's a lot going on into this. So it's not just a storytelling show, but it's not exactly a play. Mm-hmm. It's all of that and more. Yeah, it's a huge production.
Now, Sean alluded to a bit of improvisation possibly coming. Is the whole show itself scripted, or will there be some serendipitous moments, or maybe many?
Well, we've got a lot of multimedia cues, so we are scripting the whole thing, but we're leaving room for musical improvisation with Sean.
Okay. Sean, back to you. Putting all this music together, and we talked about its eclecticity, if that's a word, means that somewhere along the line you really have to kind of cozy up to the stories a bit. Was this a bit different than a lot of other composing you've done, or is it in the process of being that?
Oh, yeah, it's this whole experience is quite different. Closest thing probably would be that I also did the music for Population 45. And in a lot of ways, this is, you know, very much in that theatrical vein. So, yeah, this is definitely, you know, slightly uncharted territory for me. But that's kind of what makes it exciting. I have a lot of nerves about it, but I also know that these things, they come together and they always work out in the end with the right team.
Yeah, and it looks like you have the right team.
I think so.
So, Jody, finally for you, what kind of creative license did you or others have in embellishing the Cave Lady story, or didn't you need it at all? Because from what you described, maybe we don't need any embellishment.
Well, Megan, I believe her last name was Beers, did a thesis. Mm. She was a history student at UWEC and wrote this very huge document about the Cave Lady. Her take was very different than mine. And there's been numerous stories, like B.J. Hollers, if you're familiar, did a story. And Stephanie Farrar, who was a professor at the university, did a story on her. My take is different than that, but my entire story is factual. I didn't have to embellish anything. The way in which I tell it is a bit funny, which was a challenge at times, considering that part of Maud's history is very tragic, but there's humor in it too. So
that's good.
Yeah, I didn't have to make up anything. It's a pretty dang good story on its own.
Dang good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that story because a lot of people know about that cave down on the Eau Claire River. And some people know there's an urban legend about the woman who lived there. And not many people know that that's actually true. And even fewer people know the true story of that woman, which is far more interesting than the fact that she lived in a cave for a year with her family. So there's a lot of layers to Jody's story.
And we have a cool thing that we'll be showing during my storytelling that I don't think anybody's much seen before.
Yeah, there's a surprise at the end.
Yeah.
That's called a tease, right?
It is.
Nice job. It's called True North, Real Wisconsin Stories Unfolding Live on Stage, November 16th and 17th, Jamp Theater, Pablo Center. Have fun, you guys, as the shows approach. Mike Paulus, thanks.
You're welcome.
Jody Arnold, good luck.
Thank you.
Sean Carey, keep up the great work.
Will do. Thank you.
Well, hey, you want tickets? Sure you do, after hearing all that. Info and a tickets link are online at volume1.org/truenorth. Next, a big show tonight, Thursday, at the Pablo Center on Spectrum West. Support for WPR comes from Art Z Gallery in Amory. November features mixed media by Jan Killian, acrylics and watercolors by Cheryl Manwiller, and bead jewelry by Joanne Horisberger. More at artzgallery.org. Support also comes from Marquardt Toyota, dedicated to providing an enjoyable, stress-free buying process with welcoming facilities located off Highway 53 between Eau Claire and Chippewa Falls, or at marquardttoyota.com. Well, Jim Oliver's been reading a lot lately. He'll return with a cool book report next week. For now, he reports what's on stage.
On Golden Pond, a production of the Chippewa Valley Theater Guild will be presented today through Sunday and November 8th through the 11th in the Grand Theater in Eau Claire. The Eau Claire Children's Theater will present Henry and Ramona Friday through Sunday in the Oxford Theater. Sister Act will be staged by the Phipps Center for the Arts Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays at the Phipps Center in Hudson, and it runs through November 25th. The University of Wisconsin River Falls Theater will present A Year with Frog and Toad Friday through Sunday and November the 8th through the 10th in the Davis Theater at the University. And Enrichment Through Culture of Cumberland will present Packer Fans from Outer Space tonight, if you're listening on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday in the Cumberland Arts Center. For Spectrum West, I'm Jim Oliver.
If you're listening to the Thursday edition of this Western Spectrum, you still have time to get your tickets and see the show about which we're going to talk next. If you're listening to the Friday version, I sure hope you were there and simply want to mop up the experience by listening to an afterglow conversation. And personally, I hope it's the former, because it isn't often we get the opportunity to see and hear the level of musical expertise coming to the Pablo Center in Eau Claire tonight, Thursday night.
Gentlemen can watch while I'm scrubbing the floors, and I'm scrubbing the floors while you're gawking. And maybe once you tip me and it makes you feel swell on a radio waterfront in a radio hotel, and you never guess to who you're talking, and you never guess to who you're talking. Suddenly one night there's a scream in the night and you yell, what the hell could that have been?
When I hear him move into something, because he improvs a lot, I really go with him and I'll change the color. I'll move into more straight tone. Something maybe I sang louder at one point. I hear he's doing something different, and I really try to go with him. And he does the same with me. He knows I might be doing something a little bit different. And that's the beauty of collaboration, and it's the beauty of performance.
Kate Lindsay is an American mezzo-soprano. Baptiste Trottignon is a French jazz pianist, and they're bringing much of their stunning 2017 album, Thousands of Miles, to perform it live just for you tonight, Thursday night. It's called Closing the Distance Between Classical Music and Broadway. We caught Miss Lindsay by phone just a couple days ago. In talking about your relationship with Baptiste, this, from what I've been reading, and I'm using the word relatively now, it's a relatively new friendship in the big scheme of things, a year or two. I know musicians bump into each other, and I'm wondering if you guys were on each other's radar or not, because it's been labeled an encounter, and encounters are often unexpected. So how did the friendship happen?
Yeah, it was entirely unexpected, actually. We were absolutely not on each other's radar at all, really living in very separate worlds. Baptiste is a very well-known jazz pianist and a composer as well in France. And I honestly was working on some ideas for a recording project, and I was in a discussion with the producer. All of a sudden, one day, he just threw out, "What about Kurt Weill or Charles Ives?" Something like that. And I thought, what? Really? I'd spent a lot of time in past sort of recitals and things. I'd spent a lot of time in that era of music. But I thought, as an American classical singer, will I be put into a bit of a corner, sort of starting out with something that's potentially a very American sound? Mm-hmm. But I wanted to really give it a real look. And so I went back and did some research. And in the meantime, the producer said, "I really think you should meet this pianist, Baptiste Tourignon. He studied piano classically, and then moved into the jazz world. And Baptiste had done some discs with him in the past at another label." And so what turned out to happen was that at the time I was living in London, and so I hopped on the Eurostar one day with a bag full of music books and arrived at the train station, walked across the street to a hotel bar where I met Baptiste, and we were introduced that way. And then we just started getting to know each other, trading ideas with music. I focus a lot more on the text and the literary elements of the music, and he was really thinking a lot harmonically. And so over a few months, we developed this program together, and we never would have found each other any other way if it hadn't been for the producer Didier, who really, he's a man of great ideas, which is a huge asset to have when you're producing.
Yeah.
Discs.
Yeah, no kidding. Now, it appears there is a lot. I got a chance to watch a video of you guys working together in a large studio. It appears there's a lot of give and take, musically and other ways, that makes this relationship work. You know, and it's pretty energetic. I mean, I saw people hopping around, and I saw you guys running around the studio and trying to keep the energy level up. I do understand that kind of thing does happen often in recording sessions. I'm wondering about your live shows. Are they as animated, because that's what your relationship is about?
Yeah, and I mean, it's also very improvisatory. The way Baptiste works and the way we've constructed the program is that Baptiste improvises a lot throughout the evening. So what was most exciting to me about this project is that, yes, we have this recording that you can have in your hands, but at the same time, when you go hear it live, we're not going to do exactly what's on the recording. I mean, the tunes will sound the same, but there will always be, he always makes slight adjustments based on the moment, based on the mood in the room. And that's what we're really enjoying about performing this program as a concert, because it really comes down to the relationship, not only between Baptiste and I on stage, but it's even more so, it's between us and the audience, and we're enjoying having that interaction. But we're trying to create an environment where it feels really fluid and free to sort of allow for whatever happens. And that video you watched was from the 3 days we recorded in Berlin. So we had 3 days to put it all down. And it was exhausting and invigorating all at the same time. It was really fun.
I'd have to use the word intense as well.
Yeah. Yeah, it was really intense, but I'm a Scorpio. I thrive off of intensity. Give that to me any day. I think both of us enjoy that sort of approach to the work. Baptiste is really focused. He's really organized. So, you know, when we get together, we're really focused on what we're aiming to do and what we want to get out of it. And just really trying to be in the moment. That's, I think, the most important thing for live performance, to be in the moment with each other and with the people in the room.
Now, the album, the 2017 album, called Thousands of Miles, from which material will be viewed and listened to at the wonderful new Pablo Center in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, Thursday evening. I can guess, but where did the title come from?
Thousands of Miles relates to one of the songs on the disc. That's the most basic explanation. However, it represents far more than that. More personally, for Baptiste and I, crossing over into each other's territory in a way, we were sort of going the distance to adapt and learn from each other. And then within the program, it also represents the thousands of miles each of the composers on the disc and in the program traveled in order to be able to survive and find freedom. And they all had to leave Germany and Austria, and eventually all of them ended up in the U.S. as immigrants during the Second World War. So it was sort of a threefold, you know, explanation for the title, and it still holds true for us. We worked and worked to think of all the varieties of things we could call the disc, but in the end, that just made the most sense. It was the most clear to us.
Indiana University pops up all the time in my conversations with musicians. If you don't know, you should know that Eau Claire, Wisconsin is home to the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire, which features and is well known for nurturing a whole bunch of growing musicians. I don't want to let you go without us being wise here for a moment, and I'm asking you for our Wisconsin Public Radio younger audience to throw out some advice about how to make sure every ounce of effort comes out in school, because I have a feeling that that happened to you.
Yeah. Oh, goodness. I mean, I'll try to keep it brief, all of the things that I could say. Mainly, the resources that school and university offer are incredible. And when I was coming through Indiana University, I had to do work study in order to have some scholarship money, some spending money, basically. And I worked in the music library, and I'm so grateful to have spent the time in the library navigating all the scores and CDs and recording. And that became a really special place for me. I mean, I sound a little bit like the music nerd that I am, but I really enjoyed being in that space and having the time to sort of look and research. And that's carried me in good stead. And yet these days, as I travel, and I'm on the road so much, finding that time is so much harder. And finding that really free space to study and explore and to watch and listen to everything you possibly can, my biggest advice would be to just soak up as much as you can with those resources that are right at your fingertips. Because when we're out on the road, out and about working, it can be harder to find that library where you can get in and sift through things and look through scores. It takes a little bit more effort. And also, my big advice to young students is always study and listen and gather the information, that there will come a day where it has to become yours and your voice has to come through it. Also, get to know yourself as much as possible and live and, you know, fall in love and get your heart broken and make sure you live life, because that informs your art as well.
Wonderful advice. All of Western Wisconsin looking forward to your Thursday night performance at the Pablo Center, the beautiful new Pablo Center in downtown Eau Claire, Wisconsin. Kate Lindsay, I appreciate you being with us on Wisconsin Public Radio. Travel safely and hope to see you.
Can't wait to see you soon. Thanks.
Now, if you guys are with us live on Thursday, you're just in time. Kate Lindsay and Baptiste Trottignon perform live tonight. Tickets online at pablocenter.org, or simply convince someone special at the last minute to take in tonight's show, and you can grab tickets at the box office. It's called Closing. Well, it's about closing the distance between classical music and Broadway. And you're invited, by the way. This is new. Stay for a moderated question and answer, Q&A, with Kate Lindsay and Baptiste Trottignon immediately after the performance. Moderator Dr. Ken Pereira, an opera vocal professor at the University of Wisconsin, Eau Claire, is going to lead that discussion. Let's listen. Stunning voice of Kate Lindsay. Hey, thanks, Rachel, Dean, and Kate. Next week, Echo, Eau Claire Chamber Orchestra, concert number 2. A Nordic fiddler is going to join us from the Nordic region. Wow. Special voices make a special difference. We'll talk about that and a Wisconsin murder mystery. Don't forget, Saturday evening, the Heidi Center hosts the Whiskey Bells, Great Roots Country Music, 7:30, and the fabulous Chinese Acrobats perform Sunday and Monday afternoons. It's Forever Elvis, The Spirit Lives at the Mabel Tainter, Friday evening, 7:30, and the interactive children's music show Dolly Pops, Saturday, November 10th, 10:30 a.m. For Jim Oliver, I'm Al Ross. Thank you, thank you, thank you. See you next week.